In this episode of Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks, AMD's Ryzen, the second coming, totally liquid-cooled killer gaming PCs, getting the skinny with LG's G7 ThinQ. What's this? What's better than a Samsung 960 SSD? We'll tell you. Windows 10 April update. And yes, we're giving stuff away. Next. Welcome back, everybody, to the show we affectionately refer to as Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks. And we will offer you much geekdom, geekdom today. And with me, as always, are Marco and Chris, living it up here in the Northeast with the absolutely dismal weather we're having today, gentlemen. How's it going?
Yeah, it's gray and wet and messy and sloppy and muddy, but it's going.
Sloppy and muddy. That's the way we're good mudders here at Hot Hardware. So, Chris, are you a good mudder up there in Maine?
Oh yeah, we are firmly in mud season up here, but at least the white stuff is gone. So, got that out of the way. Yesterday was beautiful. Absolutely incredible weather yesterday, but yeah, lots of rain and junk today.
We had California skies yesterday. We did. And we were fooled for a little while, and then the crap came back like New England can throw your way. But we'll survive. We'll survive.
If you don't like the weather, wait 5 minutes.
It'll change. Yeah, no, absolutely. So lots to talk about. We missed last week. We were doing a little bit of traveling and a lot of launching. There is tons of new technology out in the interwebs right now, and some of it's courtesy of hothardware.com, where we are losing sleep at a blinding pace. But Chris, what are you excited about these days before we dive into the headlines? Like, what's getting you jazzed with technology? There's so much
throwing
going
that
on.
At me.
firing questions. Well,
we're inching closer to new graphics cards that are always fun to look at. I mean, we've got a taste with the Titan V, but you know, we got to see where the mainstream cards slide in. So that's probably the most exciting thing coming up that I really have no idea about at this point. So
we had an interesting headline today in the news, and then we'll dive into the headlines for the cast here. But we had an interesting headline here today in the news the major graphics card vendors are expecting or should see a significant decline in demand here this month. And as a result, GPUs may free up a little bit, and it's a buying opportunity for gamers.
Oh, yeah. I saw some on the shelf. I was in Best Buy yesterday picking up this controller for gaming and actually saw GPUs on the shelf. They had 1080s for $550 sold out, but they said that they had a few in. And
amazing,
incredible.
Yeah, stranger things have happened. Let's dive in right now to the headlines and talk about what we've been working on for the past couple of weeks since we missed everybody last week. AMD's second gen Ryzen, the second coming of Ryzen. This is based on the Zen Plus architecture. Marco, you wrote up a novel, War and Peace, on this new processor series by AMD. Why don't you give us the abridged version this time? How's that?
the abridged version. So I don't want to give an abridged version because I put so much effort into this one. literally, you know, it's funny, just before we go into the tech, technically, we give these articles away for free. Yes, we run ads on the site, but you know, the ads, anybody can come to the site and read these articles. This blood, particular sweat, and tears. No exaggeration. it's no longer than any other CPU launch piece that I've done before. However, because I had to redo every single test machine and retest everything top to bottom, there was about 70 hours put into that article between testing, redoing machines, writing, photography. Come by and just read it. Just spend some time on the site and read this one, even if you have no interest. All right. But you know, so get into the nitty gritty. These are,
you're still married. You're still married after all that.
I guess
for now. Do you remember who your wife is?
I remember her. I think she's starting to forget me, but I'm going to work on it next week. I'm going to work on things next week. It's her birthday next week. So yeah, these are technically brand new processors. They're using an updated manufacturing process. They're a 12 nanometer plus manufacturing process on these new Zen Plus cores, plus a bunch of enhancements in these Ryzen 2 processors. You have lower latencies between all the caches and system memory. You have higher clocks, more overclockability. You also have a new boost algorithm. Now, with the first gen Ryzen processors, you kind of had an all-core boost and a single or dual-core boost and just a sharp drop-off. If you had, you know, two threads running, you hit this boost. Any more than that, it just dropped to a lower boost. These are now more opportunistic, and they are leveraging any power or thermal headroom available to boost clocks as high as possible all the time, regardless of the number of cores. So basically across the board, due to the lower latency, higher clocks, better boost algorithm, these chips are faster than the previous gen without being a complete overhaul of the architecture. They will still work in existing AM4 motherboards after a BIOS update. Technically, new chipsets came. The X470 chipset came with these new processors, but the actual piece of silicon that makes the X470 chipset is the same as the X370. The power delivery systems have been tweaked, and the firmwares have been tweaked, and the motherboard guys just sort of optimized for power delivery for Ryzen 2. And you know, the pricing is somewhat aggressive from AMD. So the new top end is the Ryzen 7 2700X. That supplants the Ryzen 7 1800X from last year. And we also tested the Ryzen 5 2600X, which supplants the Ryzen 1600X from Ryzen 7 1600X from last year. Now, Ryzen 7 2700X is 8 cores, 16 threads with a max boost at 4.3 gigahertz. Ryzen 5 2600X is 6 cores, 12 threads, max boost 4.2 gigahertz. Now, literally across the board versus previous gen, they're faster. Power consumption, peak power consumption is actually higher because AMD is leveraging as much thermal and electrical headroom as they can with these chips. But, gotcha. You know, idle power is down and efficiency is up because they're higher performing, even though they're using a little bit more power. So literally across the board, great product from AMD. And now, so last year, if you remember, the 1800X, when it initially debuted, was priced at $599. Now the Ryzen 2 2700X, which is faster across the board and includes an awesome RGB cooler that's a really high-performance cooler for, you know, an in-the-box product, debuting at $329. So AMD being really aggressive here, and I personally think great launch from AMD.
Great launch from AMD. Wow. High praise.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
And I think that pricing is part of the equation that other people I've seen online have been overlooking a lot. They're like, yeah, the performance isn't a whole lot higher than last gen, but when you're bringing down the MSRP by that much, it makes it so much more accessible for everyone, and you're getting way more value for your money. So,
just to give an example, right? So the competitors for the 2700X are the Core i7 8700K, or the Core i7 7820X. So the 6-core Coffee Lake, really high clocked processor, or the 8-core, not quite as high clocked, super high end platform processor. Now, if you compare 7820X to Ryzen 7 2700X, Intel's got the single thread advantage still, but multi-threaded tests were kind of a toss up. It went back and forth, but the 7820X is like a $460 processor plus, you know, at least a $200 motherboard, plus you need quad-channel memory for that platform, right? So much more expensive. The 8700K is only 6 cores. It had the single-thread advantage. It lost basically every multi-threaded test except for one. And that, too, is more expensive. So $350 to $379 for the 8700K, plus Z370 motherboards are a little pricier than X470 motherboards. So, I mean, it's really, if you're looking to get into a high-end mainstream without going to the extreme platforms like Threadripper or you know, Core i9, for the high-end mainstream desktops, 2700X is really compelling, in my opinion. It's more affordable, better multi-threading, not quite as good single threading, but good enough where you're not going to really notice the difference. Just it's goodness all around, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting stuff. It's been a while, Marco. Now let's go back to the days where Intel, you know, prior to the first gen Ryzen launch, going back to the days where Intel was clearly dominant. Now, not so clearly dominant in the benchmarks. They actually lose a couple here and there in multi-threaded tests. With the price advantage that AMD has, first-time PC game rig builders or first-time enthusiast or workstation rig builders, which would you recommend these days? I mean, both platforms have their merits, but bang for the buck, is AMD on the top here? Are they leading the charge?
Bang for the buck with current pricing right now, you could make that argument, in my opinion. So it kind of depends on exactly what you want to do with the rig, right? If you're just going to game, right, you can make an argument for the Intel platform because you have better single threading. It's maybe slightly more expensive, not exorbitantly so if you go with the Coffee Lake platform Z370. So, and in low res gaming, in some games you'll get better performance because of that single thread advantage, because not every game's using all of those threads. Now, if you told me I want to be able to game, but I also do video editing and maybe some rendering, and I'm a crazy multitasker, I have a bunch of stuff running, then I'm going to say go for the threads in Ryzen 2 and save that money, because the overall experience will probably be better with the additional core resources there.
And when we're talking gaming too, your monitor is a huge part of the equation. If you have like a 4K monitor and you want to be gaming in 4K, your GPU is going to be a much bigger factor than your processor speeds anyways. But if you're doing something like a 1080p monitor with, 144 hertz or whatever, that CPU is going to be a lot more important, because that's when you're really crunching the processor trying to draw those scenes on the fly.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. No, high frame rate gaming might be that one fringe area you might see, more of an advantage for Intel. But yeah, definitely a compelling product for sure. AMD absolutely lighting a fire, you can be sure. Looks like I'm freezing here. Oh well, lighting a fire to be sure under Intel's butt, and that's nothing but goodness. It is absolutely driving market in terms of price competitive offerings and new offerings from Intel. We've seen some, a rash of releases from Intel that perhaps maybe we wouldn't have seen at the same cadence had not AMD given them chase. So hopefully I'll stop laggy McLaggin here, but let's talk about something that broke in the news, Marco. AMD Ryzen 7 2800X rumored ready to counter incoming Intel 8-core Coffee Lake S. What do you know about that?
Don't know much other beyond rumors, so I'm not going to substantiate any rumors. But I mean, look at the model numbering scheme that AMD chose this time around. Why did a 2700 replace a 18? 2700X replaces the 1800X. So there is probably room in that product stack to squeeze something else in there. When I overclocked our 2700X, all I did was use the Wraith cooler that came with the CPU. I didn't go nuts with a liquid cooler or anything high end. The Wraith cooler is high end for a processor in the box, something included with the CPU. But on just plain old air cooling, using Ryzen Master and a little bump in voltage, all I did, I got about, all core boost to only 4.25, right? So I don't know how much more room AMD has for clocks, unless they have some, we're doing some aggressive binning and they have some chips that they can get another 150 megahertz out of. If they get another 100 megahertz out of an 8-core chip, maybe they have some other tricks up their sleeve, then yeah, there's room in the stack for something else. I'm not sure that they'll do that, though, because this new Zen Plus core is going to end up on a new Threadripper Threadripper's been out for, you know, we're closing in on a year also. You see the entry-level 8-core Threadrippers, I think, are down under $500 now. So AMD has two platforms to play with, you know. If they don't want to do it on Socket AM4, they have Threadripper as well to kind of play with. So we'll see how this all shakes out.
Interesting discussion, actually.
Yeah, I think you kind of half answered Craig's question in the chat there. He's asking, because of the binning that AMD has, if there's any real need to overclock the 2700X or if that should be saved for the non-X models, the 2600 and the 2700.
You know, so XFR was a feature on the first gen chips that would boost, I think it was just a single or dual cores to 100 megahertz, even higher. So the X chips had a clock, a frequency advantage for lightly threaded workloads. That's technically gone now because even though they have XFR, you know, still in the branding, because of the new boost algorithm, they're using as much headroom as they can now anyway. So max clock is just max clock. It doesn't really go past the max clock. So is there no need to overclock X chips? I mean, most people don't need to overclock, but we're nuts and we're enthusiasts and we're going to do it anyway. That said,
says because the man all who of AMD's is Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, exactly. For Amiga emulation. That said, because all of AMD's chips are unlocked and all the cores are based on the same die anyway, you might as well, if you strictly want to overclock, save a few bucks, buy the cheaper non-X chips. They'll probably overclock to the same level anyway.
So, yeah.
That was the same thing with the first gen parts, you know?
Yeah. So this optimization, this tweak of second gen Ryzen, do you think AMD just pushed the envelope in terms of upper end clock speed, or is it really just a full up hand tuning optimization of the silicon? You know, it's obviously not a die shrink, so we're not talking process optimization, we're talking mask set, you know, actual, you know, silicon design optimization. Are we talking, you know, just some hand tuning here, or did they really just push the envelope, maybe bend some, you know, eke some better performance out of the process and bend some a little bit tighter, or is it more just hand tuning of the silicon?
All of the above and then some. So they didn't use the die is the same size, but apparently the process that was used, there's some savings in the size of the transistors apparently, but you have something changed to allow, you know, to improve that cache latency. It is a new stepping of the chip, so they probably fixed a few things. I'm assuming, we didn't get confirmation, even though I tried to get it, that some sort of some of the links within the AMD Infinity Fabric were perhaps sped up, that allowed for caches to sort of to lower that cache latency and latency out to system memory. You also have firmware optimizations on the motherboard side, new AGESA code for system memory, probably some optimizations there. Then you add in the higher clocks, and sort of it all culminates in, you know, the new boost algorithm, and it all culminates in just, you know, faster stuff all around.
Good stuff. You saw me tipping my glass when we were on screen there, and yes, I'm having a beer. It's after hours, but we do have a little bit of a reason to celebrate, because as Jonas points out in the Joan Nexus 10 points out in the chat, did you guys see AMD's results after the market? AMD plus 9.17% reported. First quarter net income of $81 million, or 8 cents on the share. Sales of $1.65 billion, up about 40% from a year ago, quarter on quarter. That's good stuff. Facebook also posted fabulous earnings as well, blowout earnings, and ad sales up 50% or something like that. I'm hoping that this is a turnaround for tech, because there's been a heck of a lot of bloodletting in the market in the last couple of weeks. It's just been brutal. So yeah, good quarter for AMD. They're turning a profit now versus many years, frankly, of just bleeding. And they've now stopped the bleeding and started regenerating the plasma, which is great. So yeah,
it's just nice to see the competition back in full swing between Intel and AMD.
Helps everybody. It really does. Yeah, it keeps Intel honest and on their game, and it gives consumers more options in the market, and we love that. So let's journey on. Speaking of options in the market, the folks at Dell have bestowed upon you, Chris, a very special machine. It is the first of its kind to hit the market. We're actually in the labs now with an early sample of the Alienware Area 51, now totally liquid cooled. So not just the CPU, but the GPUs as well. And it's got a pair of NVIDIA GPUs in there that are decked out with some cooling, right? You're kicking the tires on that thing, are you?
Yeah, don't mind me. I'm just popping the side off of this so I can bring you in. But yeah, we've
Nice.
Got to do the alien autopsies. I think it's tradition at this point. But yeah, we've got dual liquid cooled GTX 1080s. And then up here, we have a beefy Core i9 Skylake X, but at the 7980X, 18 cores, 36 threads. I don't know how you can tax it, to be quite honest. Mm. And that's not all. This is also rocking 64 gigabytes of RAM. So you can run applications for days. It has a terabyte SSD from SK Hynix and a 2 terabyte Seagate hard drive for all your data storage needs. So yeah, this has three liquid cooling loops. So the processor and each of the GPUs are on their own radiators, as you can see down here. Yeah. Nicely sleeved tubing there. You know, the Alienwares aren't quite your boutique level of beautifully cable managed interiors, but the outside looks great and they perform like a spaceship.
Like nobody's business.
So, yeah. So, yeah. You know, if you're home, you're gaming, you're not necessarily showing off to anyone, do the looks really matter that much? I don't know. From the outside, it looks nice. It's been a fun system to play with so far. We've been doing some game streams with it. I'm thinking we'll
there's Brittany driving around in her pimp mobile, actually. Yes.
Oh yeah. We're looking at maybe Friday evening for a little more streaming on the system, checking out some different games. If anyone wants to check that out, if you have game suggestions, leave them in the chat and we'll consider it.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. That's, that is a cool looking rig. The Area 51, we've reviewed it a couple of times here at Hot Hardware. We've had various incarnations of Intel machines. We had an Area 51 Threadripper edition, which was pretty fantastic. We did some serious mega tasking on that, including game streaming, rendering, video simultaneously, and recording our stream simultaneously, and mixing it with OBS, all on the Threadripper rig. And so this is more of the same. 18 cores Intel high core count CPU Skylake X, and so three individual radiators, three individual cooling fans, right, and three individual cooling loops, one for the CPU and one for each GPU. How does that thing sound? Does it sound like a spaceship?
So it's actually not that bad. I mean, obviously I have headphones on now, so I can't even hear it, but even with these off, you know, it's like a dull hum. There are obviously quieter systems on the market when you have that much cooling going on. But, you know, as far as how much power it's packing in there, it's not bad.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and what's interesting about Dell, you're right in that when you look at some of the boutique builders out there, they really, super tight with all the cable management. Dell's stuff is a little bit different. There's and you see this from some of the more mass produced, less boutique, high-end gaming systems from like HP as well, where the focus is on a custom interior layout, like that Area 51, that design inside that Triad chassis is just so totally customized that you're able to get three 140 millimeter radiators or whatever they are. I don't know what's that. They look like 140s to me, right? position two in the front and one in the rear and have room for it with two GPUs with a huge 1500 watt power supply. So they focus, you know, solely, you know, not solely, but real definitive focus on the layout and the this construction of the interior mechanicals. And then, yeah, I think their cable wiring is pretty good. They tuck it away, but it's not like you can, I mean, it's not completely, you can eat off of it. Maybe
it's not to Marco's like, levels.
Yeah. like a main gear rig or something like that. But the design is such that, like, one of the things I really like about that rig is it's completely tubeless. You know, you can pop out the little slide locks on the graphics cards in the card cage, right? Unsnap the other end and change the card out, right?
That was really great with that. Also, because it has that tri design, it's very easy to reach in back and mess with your cables, change connections a lot more easily than when you have the regular 90-degree flat back desktop, you know, and you're reaching behind things. So it does help with the ergonomics, especially when, you know, you're doing things like streaming and you're changing webcam setups and stuff like that. It's very quick and easy to work with it on the go.
Yeah. No, it's an interesting rig for sure. You're going to be digging into that. It is the first time Dell and Alienware have actually liquid cooled their GPUs. Before that, it was just the CPU and the Radeon reservoir setup for that. But now we've got dual liquid cooled GPUs, 1080s in that.
Dual 1080s.
So the blocks on them must be custom as well. Like you see the pipes going into the back of the cards. They've got a card backing that's custom.
Right. Yeah. It looks like it's all custom going in there. We'd have to go back to the footage to show you, but, it looks like they've done their homework on it.
Sure. And then you took a look at, some new Dell gaming rigs that were actually going to be hopefully getting a review unit in on pretty soon. It's some new Inspiron gaming machines. I think it was the G series
yes, the G series, the G3, the G5 and the G7. So that's, the Alienware, which I didn't actually have time to take a look at there, but if you go down, I think it's lower in there.
Yeah, right there. That's the Inspiron gaming.
Yeah. So these are super compelling in my opinion, because, you know, they start at about, I think it was 650 or 750 with the GTX 1050 on board, Max-Q. So they've got a ton of power for the price, and they're really thin. I think it was on the order of 25 millimeters thick. So you're not quite down in the crazy ultrabook level, but for a gaming machine, it's something you don't mind toting around all day. And I think they're very well tuned for that 1080p display in the base model. The G5 and the G7, you can optionally get a 4K display if you really want to be pixel peeping with it. But I'm still of the mindset with laptops that 1080p is just fine because your screen is so small, it's still going to look fantastic. And I think the 1050 to 1060 range of GPUs, depending on just how extreme you want to go with the AAA titles, is just right.
Yeah. You know, it's an interesting offering in that usually when you think notebooks that have, you know, the capability to game, you're thinking a little bit larger machine for sure, which these are, but not crazy. They're not boat anchor gaming notebooks.
Right.
And you also think upscale in terms of cost, but these are actually dropping in, frankly, at really mid-range notebook, not budget. I mean, you think budget notebook, you think $500. But when you talk about a notebook that's $700 to $800 or $850 tops, that's kind of mid-range pricing for a decent laptop these days. And with the ability to game with a discrete GPU, that's a compelling offering. When you think about use cases, I mean, kids going off to college, lots of different use cases, as well as, you know, gamers on a budget that want to be on the
go. My guess is that Dell saw how popular their Latitude gaming laptop was last year. I forget the exact model number of it, but it was right about in line with these, a little bit stockier in build, but I think we saw a very positive reception to it. I don't know what the sales figures are, obviously, But just hitting that price point of right around $800 and they're going to fly off the shelves.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to get one of those in pretty soon. And we saw him at PAX East and, you know, kind of in person, kick the tires on him. But impressive stuff from the folks at Dell. And we'll see what it looks like when we get our hands on it and on the test bench and all strapped down with benchmarks and ready to roll. So stay tuned for that. Chris, thanks for that. Good luck with the Alienware rig. You've got some homework to do there, buddy.
Oh, yes. Very, very difficult homework, I assure you. It's a real struggle to get through.
It's a tough gig, but somebody's got to do it, Chris. And that's you. Mm-hmm. So, let's talk about the world of mobile. Marco and I were in scenic Manhattan yesterday. No, actually, we were in Brooklyn yesterday. We weren't in Manhattan. We were in Brooklyn. Yeah. We usually go to Manhattan. And we spent some time with the folks at LG. We can't talk too much about this, but they did let slip some information on the LG G7 ThinQ, is how you say that. I was thinking it was Think, a funky way of saying Think. But John, I don't know if you can bring that up. The LG G7 ThinQ 6.1-inch display delivers punchy 1,000 nit brightness with notch control, is the headline. And so LG gave us the full Monty, hands-on, and we went and did deep dive reporting on this, which we are under NDA until the 2nd of May. They are announcing, they've already announced that they'll be talking about the device in full disclosure on the 2nd of May. But they allowed some interesting information about the display, which is actually quite unique. As you could see there, yes, it's got a notch. We'll talk a little bit about that, but perhaps I don't know. You know, I'm kind of, once I saw it in action, I'm a little bit more sold on the other way, and we'll talk about that. But let's talk about the display itself. The display type is not, with that kind of brightness, you might think might be OLED. It's not. It's actually RGBW with a dedicated white pixel for generating better contrast and serious brightness output. Now, 1,000 nits brightness, obviously it's not pushing that all the time, because you're gonna kill battery life if you're rocking 1,000 nits and you're pushing that display. Yeah, I don't know about burning your retinas, but yeah, it's pretty bright. It's daylight bright, and that's the great thing about it, is, you know, now you're out on the beach and you can crank that sucker up if you really want to. It's also a very efficient display. They're talking about roughly 30% power advantage versus the previous gen G6. When it's, you know, in normal mode, when it's not pushing that 1,000 nits. But 1,000 nits brightness and a great contrast and color performance as a result of that. HDR-capable display. And 6.1-inch, which I think from a smartphone's perspective is kind of perfect. When you start getting 6.2 and up from there, anything larger than 6 to me feels a little too tall, especially with these ultra-wide aspect ratios we're getting now. I think this is like 19 and change. It's not 18 to 1, but it's 19 and change. I have to look it up. Yeah, so it's QHD plus 3120 by 1440. Yeah, 19:5:1 aspect ratio. So it's really an interesting display. And where LG is big on OLED, they did not go OLED with the G7 ThinQ. It is a very thin phone. That's about all we can say. Just you can imagine from the name. We really can't, because we're under NDA, to talk about much more than that. But it covers 100% of the DCI-P3 color space. So it's actually a pretty impressive display. And yes, the notch. Now, as you could see, John, I don't know if you can pull that screenshot back up, but the notch is controllable. If you go up to the top of the post there, John. So there's the notch you're looking at right now. But if you scroll up, Marco's got this control panel at LG. Yeah, there you go, John. This control panel that LG has fashioned for the device that allows you to, if you would like, eliminate the notch. Now, the notch is designed to, and this is what people are really getting up in arms, because it's not contiguous. It sort of breaks the clean lines of a nice rectangular display. I get that. I don't think it's
the video intrusion that gets me.
Yeah, when you go to horizontal, yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. But you think about it in portrait mode, which is 90% of what you're viewing on a smartphone. You're actually utilizing more of the display for things like carrier strength and battery life and date and time. And so it's higher up on the display around the camera and gets you more usable space. You don't have to have a complete, blacked out bezel to go across where the camera is. You can go up and around the camera. That's obviously the notch. As long as you can control that in horizontal landscape mode when you're viewing movies, you're pretty good. And actually, LG actually offers two types of vertical bars across the top to eliminate the notch. There's this extra rounded version of it. You can see it right there on the top there, a little bit more rounded corners. And then there's this flat, little bit thinner bar across the top to just maximize as much as you can up until it hits the camera array. So that's how they do it. And I like it because at least you have an option. I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, with the iPhone 10, you have the option to eliminate the notch, do you? I'm not an iPhone guy, so maybe I'm wrong there. Guys, anybody know that?
I've only barely touched one, to be honest, so I can't say.
Yeah.
What was the question specifically?
The question was, does the iPhone 10 give you the ability, like LG's G7 ThinQ, to eliminate the notch? I don't think they do.
Not at this point. I'm not sure if there's any apps that do it in the App Store, but not at this point, no.
Right. So you have what we called notch control, which is, it sounds a little funny, but it's kind of the best of both worlds. You get that extra real estate when you're holding the phone for everyday use in portrait mode. And you don't care about watching a movie. Flip it into standard mode when you want to watch a movie, and you want to eliminate the notch. You can do that. So.
Sorry, I'm just imagining now a constitutional amendment for notch control.
That's important. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We must have freedom of choice to eliminate the notch or maintain the notch. But yeah, so it's there. And so I think it's interesting to watch this smartphone as it enters the market. LG's, they're kind of an underdog for me. And they've always released, the last couple of releases, they've introduced some very compelling products. The LG V30 was my daily driver for a long time because when that thing
came out, an awesome camera.
Great phone. Yeah, great phone, great camera, 6-inch display, OLED, beautiful phone, and I ran that for a long time. And I've moved on to the Pixel 2 XL. I kind of got a hankering for Android 8 Oreo, just pure Oreo. But I really like LG's thin skin that they put over the OS. If they're gonna treat it up a little bit, LG doesn't overbloat it. Samsung's been getting a little bit heavy on the bloat, in my opinion, with their skins lately. So I kind of was annoyed with that. But they make some great phones that I think kind of get a little bit overlooked in the market. And so the G7, we'll have to see once we get it in. It's lining up to be a pretty impressive device. Marco, what'd you think? You had your hands all over that sucker. What'd you think of the G7 ThinQ?
I think we're only allowed to talk about the screen.
Right.
So
the screen was okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good looking screen. Let's stop there. So
what about the notch? What about the notch?
So I mean, I'm on the fence. I kind of think like you, right? When you're in portrait mode, why not do something flashy with the design if you just have the time and carrier signal strength up there anywhere? It's just a bar, but it looks funky to me. And to me, a more beautiful design aesthetic is clean lines, clean straight lines. So that's just what I prefer. And then if you have nice, clean, straight lines, the issues associated with the notch in landscape mode go away.
Yeah.
So, and we'll get there. So, we saw you know, Synaptics has that behind the screen fingerprint sensor that is using the space between the pixels on OLED panels to optically see a fingerprint. That sort of same technology can come to a camera at some point, I have to believe, right? Because it's just, instead of a camera capturing a fingerprint, it's a camera capturing something else. You know, they have to do something with optics behind the screen as well. But I think that is not a technical limitation that can't be overcome. That's going to happen at some point. And then it's really just a matter of hiding the speaker, which doesn't really have to be right there at the top. It could be along the top edge of the phone. And then you'll really have all screen on the front. One thing that was said in conversation yesterday was all smartphones are starting to kind of look alike now, but the technology is advancing to the point where we're probably less than 2 years away from some sort of real revolution where someone goes nuts with a new design because we'll have maybe bendable displays or other sort of features that just aren't available because the technology is not there yet right now. So kind of indifferent to most of this. I want the most stable, fastest phone that just works. And like you said, you know, LG has done a nice job with the skin, but you ultimately migrated to some clean Oreo action. So that's sort of my thinking as well. I just want the phone to work, be reliable, and have all these great features, but not get in the way of me actually using it.
Yeah, I think that's key, and I'm really hoping these guys. I mean, there's a lot to be said for simplifying the interface with some additional hooks for, you know, daily activities, and I think that's sometimes what some of these skins try and achieve is quicker access, less drill down. But Google has gotten so good with Android now that, man, Oreo is 8.1 on the Pixel 2 XL is unbelievably smooth and very easy and very intuitive. And Marco, you and I, we traveled to Brooklyn and we were in the car and I was riding shotgun with you doing the nav, right? On the phone. And I'm just talking to the phone. I'm not typing a dang thing. I'm saying, okay, Google, and spitting in addresses, finding a restaurant. I mean, it was just, and it just really works well. It's clean. And so it's really hard to differentiate. I think if you're on the manufacturer side, it's really hard to differentiate with a skin. You got to differentiate with hardware and features enabled in the OS, not skin, right?
Yeah. Like for me, right, I think you differentiate with camera and screen is really the only way to go. If everybody's design is roughly the same and everyone's got thin phones and big batteries, in this order, right? Camera quality, screen quality, battery life.
Yeah.
Those are how you differentiate.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what everybody wants. Everybody wants to take great pictures. They want a screen that looks awesome. And they want a phone that lasts a long time untethered.
Yeah,
we just triggered Craig's Google Home Mini saying, "Okay, Google, order Craig some diapers."
Diapers?
Isn't he diapers? Triggered my phone.
pizza. Order him some pizza. It's pizza time. Dang it!
Man, I had good pizza for dinner. That was a good decision.
And Joe Nexus says, "Pretty sure Steve Jobs wouldn't allowed the notch." And I think you're right. He's all about simplicity, that guy, or was.
He could have had an excellent way to market it, because really his gift, beyond everything else, like brilliant technologist, obviously, but marketing was really the way he knew how to go. And I think I think he could have had a way to even make me satisfied with the notch. But
he could have sold you the Kool-Aid. Yeah. Funny. Yeah. Funny stuff. All right, well, let's get back to the core computing tech. We had a very prominent launch in the storage world. Samsung launched their SSD 970 series, the SSD 970 Pro and the SSD 970 Evo. This is the follow-on to the very successful SSD 960 series from Samsung, which was widely regarded as one of the best SSDs you can buy, NVMe solid-state drives. Marco, you ran these around the test track. Are you impressed?
I am. So here they are.
little fellas.
You guys see those well? So there's a 1.5 terabytes of solid state storage right there. 970 Pro, 970 Evo. So, yeah, the Samsung 960 Pro, that thing came out, the 960 Pro and 960 Evo came out all the way back in 2016. It just seems like such a long time ago to me that these drives have been really kicking butt for that long. So Samsung has finally updated their flagship NVMe M.2 Gumstick SSDs. What differentiates the 970 Pro from the 970 Evo is the NAND used on the drives. So the 970 Pro is using a 2-bit MLC 64-layer VNAND. The 970 Evo is using 3-bit TLC 64-layer VNAND, right? So MLC versus TLC. Now, because the TLC typically has a write disadvantage versus MLC, what the 970 Evo also has is turbo write, intelligent turbo write is what Samsung calls it. So it will use a portion of the drive as an SLC cache to speed writes up to a certain amount. I believe on the 1 terabyte drive, it can, like, actually, I can tell you in 1 second. On the 1 terabyte drive, you can have a max 36 gigabytes of turbo write size. So if you're not writing more than 36 gigs, you kind of get really fast writes on the drive. Now, how Samsung further improved these drives. So they have a new controller. They have a new controller called the Phoenix controller. They did not disclose how many cores in there. I'm going to go ahead and assume it's a 5-core like the previous gen design, but it's clocked higher. And one of the cores is now dedicated for optimizing communications between the drive and the host system. They've also added a nickel layer to basically act as a heat spreader to help thermals on the chip. So you have the latest NAND, you have a new controller that's faster, and it has better thermal capacity. So the firmwares have also been tweaked. And what you end up with is, so both the 970 Pro and the 970 Evo have max read speeds of about 3.5 gigabytes per second. That's pretty darn good. That's towards the top of the stack versus everybody else that's out there. Now, writes on the 960 Pro peaked at about 2.1 gigs a second. These, the 970 Pro will peak at 2.7 gigs a second, and the Evo at 2.5. So improvements across the board there. Now, if you come by and you look at the numbers, it's kind of mixed because Samsung sent us a 512 gig Pro and a 1 terabyte Evo. So the larger capacity drives typically have a performance advantage because there's more channels to work with in the controller. Mm-hmm. But what you'll see is the 970 Pro is basically faster than the 960 Pro across the board. The 970 Evo is faster as well in reads. Sometimes it's faster in writes, not always, right? But you have higher IOPS as well, and lower latency, which is probably more important to some people. So you end up with more throughput, lower latency, and more, you know, capacity for more IOPS in drives with a more modern controller, more modern firmware, NVMe 1.3 support now in these drives. So real all win across the board. Now, the 970 Pro does carry a premium. These guys are priced at about 61 cents a gigabyte, depending on capacity. It kind of fluctuates a little bit. The 970 Evo, though, is really aggressively priced. So it's one of the fastest drives you can get, and it's about 43 cents a gigabyte. So you could get the 1 terabyte drive, for example. It's MSRP is $449. Mm-hmm. That is really not bad considering the performance level. So, good stuff from Samsung this time around.
Yeah. I mean, so with those price differentials for the average mainstream user, or maybe let's even say the average mainstream user and maybe the workstation professional. So you're not mission critical with your data, let's say. Evo, is that the way to go?
The Evo is probably the way to go for most people. So there's an interesting comment on the article on how somebody upgraded to an NVMe drive and didn't really see that much of an improvement versus his SATA drive for day-to-day computing. And that's because those 4K random reads and writes are really the important number in that regard. So if you want that really fast, snappy feeling system, you want those fast, random 4K reads and writes. Now, even these super fast NVMe drives, low Q-depth 4K random reads and writes are in, I'm going to give you the number in 1 second. So the fastest NAND-based drive, the 970 Pro, is only about 63 megs per second reads and 191 megs per second writes. That's still SATA territory. So you don't really see that huge advantage in day-to-day. If you are moving some big files around, you know, you want the fastest drive out there because, you know, that you'll notice versus SATA drive. But for just chugging along, it's tough to call. Now, technically, MLC should be more endurance, and it does. It's about twice. So the 970 Pro is about twice the endurance at the same capacity as the Evo. But, I mean, it's so rare. It's not that SSDs are so durable. I think most people would be happy with either. So get the biggest, fastest drive your budget allows.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think about these guys versus other options in the market? Are they kind of, I mean, the 960 series arguably was one of the best or the best NVMe SSD on the market, in my opinion. They sold a crap load of them. They were showing up in configs from, boutique system builders to volume system builders, the OEM mm-hmm. version of it. 970 kind of the same thing. Is it more of the same?
I think so. I think it's going to be real popular. I think the Evo is going to be all over the place in, you know, enthusiasts that have, or that are somewhat budget conscious. I mean, it's really great. The elephant in the room, or it's not the elephant because the capacity is so small, but Optane is really what has enthusiasts drooling because those drives, like just to give you an example, right? If you look at those drives are optimized for low queue depth, 4K random reads and writes, right? The real important where most of the consumer workloads happen, right?
Right.
So you can get, whereas the 970 Pro is about 63 gigs megabytes per second, the 118 gig small Optane 800P, it's 233 megabytes per second, right?
Wow.
And the Optane drives are even lower latency than the NAND drives. So those are noticeable snappiness improvements when you're using those drives, but the capacities are tiny. And if you want the higher capacity 900P, you're going to pay, you know, it's triple the price or double the price. Right. So we're at an interesting inflection point here. Ideally, if you have the budget, Optane drive for your OS, big NAND drive for everything else, and you got the best of both worlds. I wonder who's going to build a system like that soon.
I was going to say that.
Here I was just thinking about how we had just gotten away from the dedicated SSD for your OS and everything else on a data drive, and now here it comes back with Optane, and there will probably be something to follow Optane.
I think 3D XPoint is going to continue to evolve and get better.
Oh yeah,
it's going to be pretty sick.
Got to get some bigger capacities. Yeah. Got to get bigger capacities and lower prices on Optane. But yeah, it's definitely an impressive technology for sure. And when we first saw Optane, honestly, when we're shifting gears, we kind of were like, "Huh, this is interesting." Kind of had to figure it out, and then we were like, "Oh yeah, look at that! All the small file transfers that everybody does day to day." I mean, honestly, if you're doing, for example, video editing, crunching heavy duty sequential transfers, NVMe solid state drive is going to serve you just fine for that use case. It's probably the fastest thing out there. Mm-hmm. Running your system day to day, you know, multitasking, lots of quick bursty transactions, Optane is going to crush the average NVMe SSD. But it's a totally different price point, totally different capacity right now. It's in its infancy. So interesting stuff to sure.
Joe Nexus Joe Nexus is actually a little bit psychic. We're on the same wavelength because, oh, here's the sneak peek of the WD Black that I was just about to mention. So I have the numbers for this drive in the Samsung review because they came in about the same time. And I had to retest every one of these SSDs again because of Spectre and Meltdown. So lots of time spent putting this article together. So yeah, the WD Black is even more affordable than the Evo with great read speeds. And it was actually much faster in some of the write tests. So this is a very interesting drive. I haven't priced it all out and kind of digested it all yet. But WD definitely has some goodness right here. That review should be live in the next few days. Obviously, all the testing is done. All my pictures are done. I just have to piece the article together. But yes, Joe, you are correct. This is real competition for Samsung.
So you're saying the writes were significantly better. What were you pushing for writes on that thing?
So not in every test, which is what's funny. Obviously, there's, you know, some firmware optimizations that maybe WD can do. But let me find one specifically. So if I were to go to like in Atto, right, the WD Black in the write test was fastest across the board once the transfer size was higher than 128 megabytes. It was slower with small file transfers, which you'll see. Okay. That's sort of the rub, right? So up until about the 32 meg transfer size, it was slower. But after that, it's literally like 400 megs a second faster than the 970 Pro. In
wow. So large sequential writes for sequential video guys. Yeah.
Yeah. WD's got something nice here and it's cheaper.
So how much cheaper? Stuff.
A lot cheaper? I have to go look. I'm not sure because I didn't like go to Amazon and price it while I was doing this article. Yeah. It's cheaper though.
Competitive stuff. And no, that's fine. I don't mean to put you on the spot. Yeah, no, Samsung. Yeah. Samsung obviously producing their own memory. WD picking up flash technology from the acquisition of SanDisk. And SanDisk, a lot of folks don't know, is or was before WD acquired them. Now they're part of a big storage giant called Western Digital. But SanDisk was actually one of the biggest NAND flash suppliers in the world. Right on the level of Micron and Samsung. You think Micron, Micron, Intel, they're partners in crime. Samsung and SanDisk. And so WD moved in on that, and that was huge. That got them, launched them into the solid state storage space where they know they needed to go to evolve from just spinning media. And yeah, they've done some interesting stuff with that, with the folks at SanDisk and their whole technology with flash. Chris, you jonesing for a Western Digital Black or a 970 Pro or Evo?
I mean, faster storage is always very, very welcome. As I get more into heavy photo editing, video editing, probably those larger file transfers might push me to Western Digital. But Samsung has never steered me wrong. I've used from the 830 to the 850 Evo, or no, 850 Pro, I think is what I have in my work computer right now. The 950s, 960s have been great. So Samsung really has that strong reputation, but Western Digital, they've acquired SanDisk, obviously, and they have the reputation with...
What's up, Freckles?
Little distraction here.
Look at the size of that beast.
It's only 110 pounds of love.
Yeah, that's it.
But, yeah, so... it's hard to say if I really have a preference between the two. I would be eager to try the Western Digital just for something different because I have been on Samsung SSDs for so long. Yeah. But I don't really see how you could go wrong with either one.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff.
So the WD Black 1 terabyte is the exact same. It's the exact same price as the 970 Evo on Amazon right now, right? $449 for 1 terabyte. I'm looking through each of my graphs, and it's a tough call, right? Samsung was a little better on latency, way better in terms of IOPS. You don't need the crazy high IOPS, though, for desktop workloads.
Right.
WD Black trailed in reads, but wins most of the write tests versus the Evo. So it's really a tough call. So we'll see. I have to digest it all.
It's fascinating that Samsung actually just stepped out, right before the 970 launch. They actually launched it a couple of weeks ago. We're still playing catch up because we've been traveling and launching. But yeah, that was sort of unexpected. It was out of left field, and they've really got some game here. So yeah, good stuff. And with a name like Samsung, it's trustworthy. Samsung and Western Digital, it's trustworthy. Impressive stuff. I mean, SSDs have come a long way. They are more reliable now in many respects versus hard drives. All of that, reliability issue and endurance concern, if it flips a bit and breaks, you lose your data. Yeah, it's kind of permanent with an SSD, and maybe you can salvage stuff with mechanical platters, but I don't know. They're way more reliable these days and way faster.
If you're using a mechanical hard drive as your boot drive, you're wrong.
You're wrong. These days, you're wrong. Chris says you're wrong. All right, well, let's wrap it up. We're getting down to the bottom of the hour, which is our top of the hour, and 6:30 time frame here. And we'll skip the last headline we were going to talk about because we're running out of time. But we'll mention that we had a big story go up at Hot Hardware. We'll just mention it real quick. Microsoft confirms the Windows 10 April update with lots of new features. And so there is an April update coming for Windows 10. Microsoft actually went formal with that in a new version of Edge that was rolled out with the on the Fast Ring and the Insiders program. And so there's a bunch of features coming, some nice enhancements to things like file sharing between devices. That's going to be cool. As well as Cortana tweaks for things like skills. They're sounding a little bit like Amazon here for their AI. Really cool stuff. It's great to see Microsoft continuing to drive innovation in the OS. In my opinion, leaving Apple in the dust in terms of desktop OSs these days, and really just pushing out real innovation on the desktop. Well, we're Microsoft fans here. We'll just come out and say it. We're PC geeks, but I mean, Windows 10 is just a fabulous OS. And yeah, Microsoft is going to be rolling out an update. Actually, may not make it in time for April. We had a story up today that the April update may not hit in April. It may hit more like in May. So stay tuned for that. But Marco, you're getting ready. You're getting ready to play jolly tech geek Santa guy, right?
I am. I will quickly burn through. So the our giveaway with AMD and Corsair is almost time to bring it to a close. I have the AMD hardware in hand. Corsair should be shipping any day now because we're going to wrap this up. But yeah, AMD Ryzen 5 2400G, ASRock motherboard, Corsair case, memory, PSU, and input devices. I will at least video the build. Maybe I'll live stream it if Chris can convince me to do it. But yeah, all you got to do is come by the site, like a couple of Facebook pages, comment on some articles and news posts, and chat with some like-minded tech geeks, have some fun. Don't spam though. Only good comments are going to count. And that's it. And you're entered to win. We'll pick the winner in just a few days.
Yeah, baby. Raven Ridge, CPU, GPU combination, all on one chip there from AMD. And gaming keyboard and mice to go with, and a mouse to go with it. Great case, good stuff from the folks at Corsair and AMD. We appreciate the sponsorship for this giveaway. We give away something every month almost, so you really should swing by because we just want you to hang out and spend some quality time with us once in a while and chat it up and make friends on the site, right? Fellow geeks, right, Marco? That's what this is all about.
Exactly. Join the Discord and get the forums.
Yeah, we do. We put a link in the chat for Discord if you want to chat it up with us randomly. We keep that fired up too, Chris and I do. And I don't know, Marco, you should try Discord.
Marco, you got to join. We got to get Paul in there, maybe Brandon.
There's only so many hours in the day. Yeah. Uh-huh. He's thinking, oh my God, I don't have any more minutes in my life. I need to test 1,000 devices.
Oh my gosh.
No, it's all good. It's all good. But yeah, stop by the site, hothardware.com. That's where you can find us on the web and where you can find that giveaway that you can jump in. Got a couple days left before we close on that. I think it's end of the month, April 27th or thereabouts, when we're closing away that giveaway. And hothardware.com, that's the site. YouTube.com/hothardware or hothardwarevids. Facebook.com/hothardware. Twitter.com/hothardware, where you can tweet us and we'll tweet you back. And that about wraps it up for this week's Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks. Guys, what are we going to say? Marco?
Have a good day. See you later, folks.
Stop by the site. We got Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Make sure you follow.
On his whiteboard.
Got an update somewhere. There we go. Care of Brittany, of course. Thanks for stopping. I don't think that far ahead.
Peace.